Let's read from verse 32 of Matthew chapter 9. As they went out, behold, they brought to him a man, mute and demon-possessed. And when the demon was cast out, the mute spoke, and the multitude marveled, saying, It was never seen like this in Israel. But the Pharisees said, He casts out demons by the ruler of the demons. And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd. Then he said to his disciples, The harvest truly is plentiful, but the laborers are few. Therefore pray the Lord of the harvest to send out laborers into his harvest. Here in the life of our Lord we see power without parallel. Remember he said, All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore and make disciples among all the nations. The power is his. All power is given unto me in heaven and in earth. Go ye therefore. As a young man, that really came home to my heart. I am sending you forth with my authority, with my power behind you. The power is not in us. We have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellency of the power may be of God and not of us. Tremendous words, aren't they? And he also says, and our brother mentioned it a little while ago, My grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Then we have sheep without a shepherd. How sad it is as we look upon the world today, the multitudes who do not know the Lord. And he was moved with compassion. Do we have a compassion for the lost multitudes around us? By nature we are selfish and we live in a selfish society. Please, Lord, make me Christ-centered. We need to make that our prayer. Remember the prodigal son? He said, Father, give me. But later on, what did he say? Father, make me. Make something of my life that it might count for you. Deliver me from my natural self-centeredness and the self-centeredness of the society in which I live. And then we have harvest without helpers or with few helpers. And we could ask ourselves the question, is he calling you? I notice in the life of Peter there was a call to salvation. The Lord said, Peter, come after me and I will make you to become fishers of men. There's the call to follow the Lord. Come after me. And Peter obeyed, and you notice that in the calling, in the obedience, there's the making. And the Lord made something of Peter, didn't he? The Lord made something of him. He made something of his life. And then there was the call to service, where the Lord said, Feed my sheep, feed my lambs. And so the Lord is calling out, but we need to be very sure of the call. The call needs to be clear, and this can be very confusing to young people. We need to wait upon the Lord, and if we really want to know the will of the Lord in our lives, I've proved there's been two major times of crisis in my life where I had to make very, very big decisions. The first was in 1975 in going out into full-time service in North Queensland. And the Lord, I waited on the Lord and he made it very, very clear. And Romans 12, 1 and 2, I believe, is one of the keys to knowing the will of God. If we will present our bodies as a living sacrifice to God, holy and acceptable in his sight, which is only our reasonable service, and if we will not be conformed to this world, but we will be transformed by the renewing of our mind, then we will prove what is that good and perfect and acceptable will of God. God wants us to know his will. The problem is often we are not really available. And so Romans 12, 1 and 2 again came into play last year in my life, because I again faced an unexpected challenge from the Lord. And I want to just share a little bit of that with you now in relation particularly to Kenya. I've been the editor of Facts for Faith Incorporated now for some 14 years. It's an assembly-based body with brothers from a number of assemblies in the Brisbane area, and I became editor in 1986. You may be familiar with the magazine Facts for Faith. This is our new version as we enter into the 21st century. There are samples up the back there on the back seat. I invite you to take a sample of these. Some 6 years after becoming editor, I was burdened about a teaching magazine, and we began the Australasian Christian Digest. And these magazines, over the years, we send them into New Zealand, we send numbers to the Solomon Islands, we send many, many magazines into New Guinea. Of course, within Australia, they are mainly subscription, although we do give them to full-time workers. And we send hundreds of them into New Guinea. We send them to other lands where we've had requests for them, and these are all gratis. Some go into India, some into South America. And we began to get requests from Nigeria and also a few from Ethiopia. Many years ago we began sending them there. And some 2 years ago I began to get a letter, I received a letter from the southwest corner of Kenya from a James Omwandu. And James wrote to me saying he was married, a 27-year-old, and he'd received one of our magazines and he wanted Christian literature, and he began to write to me. And so I began to send him some literature, some of our booklets that we publish. We have a book list that's also up the back. If you're interested in taking one of our book list catalogues, please feel free to do so. A little book that I put together called The New Testament Church. I send him The Emmaus Course by William MacDonald, Christ Loved the Church, which I think is an excellent booklet, and I've used it over the years to teach people the principles that I personally believe in, and the churches that I work with believe in. The Wamarin Christian Fellowship, we have a tremendous growing work there. It's some 10 years old now, and we're constantly seeing people saved, and the church is just thriving. We thank God for the support that they've given us and the love that is behind us in that particular assembly that we're now associated with, our commending assembly. And I began to send these books to James, and he wrote back very positively, and he began to send photographs of himself and then of this new work, a new church, only a few members, and a little Sunday school. Just in the bush, it appeared to me to be, some grass huts was all I could see in the background. And then he began to say, the whole church is praying for you to come. Now this went on for nearly 2 years and I took no notice. And then I began to say, you know, Lord, what are you saying to me? And he's saying, please come out and teach us. So I began to pray about it. And the burden got deeper and deeper in my heart. And then I received a letter from another chap in the same area, and these two men were not known to each other. His name is George Cecil. George began to write to me, and basically the same, saying, look, we are planting churches and we need you to come and teach. We need missionaries, we need Bibles, we need help, will you please come? And we also, both groups were saying, we want you to register our churches. Churches have to be registered in Kenya with the government. We want you to register our churches as Facts for Faith Incorporated churches in Kenya. And when they got my letter that I was associated with the Wamarin Christian Fellowship, they began calling their churches Nagashio Christian Fellowship, Gita Christian Fellowship. And this was the way it was heading. And of course it's very difficult in correspondence to give direction in these areas. I would receive letters with lots of questions. So I then, through Wendy Strachan, I emailed Wendy and asked her if she could put me in touch with an assembly worker in Nairobi that I had contacts over there, and I wanted someone to visit them. And I was put in touch with Rex and Dorothy Reardon. Rex is the director of the Emmaus Bible School, a lovely couple, a little bit older than me. So I rung Rex up and began to talk to him and said, now what do you think about me coming over? I said, you know, I'm 63, it's pretty old to be thinking about going to Kenya. And he said, "Oh, I'm older than that." The Lord has his way of picking the props and the excuses out from under us. So then George wrote another letter to me, and when I received that, I went down and I just had this deep conviction, and I laid it out before the Lord, Romans 12:1-2. I said, "Here I am, Lord. If this is what you want, I'm available." And I had a real sense that this was his will. I went down, not having the airfare. I booked and I began to share with the folk that I was going to Kenya. And the Lord just provided. I then found I needed a four-wheel drive over there. This area was very isolated. It's down in the southwest corner of Kenya, right on Lake Victoria. Some of the churches I went to, in about 100 to 200 kilometre square along the Tanzanian border onto Lake Victoria and inland into the Rift Valley. And as I began to talk to Rex, I said, "You know, is it possible to, is there a vehicle available?" "No vehicle available." I said, "Would a couple of $1,000 buy an old four-wheel drive?" "No way." But anyway, by the time I arrived in Nairobi, Rex and Dorothy met me, took me in, and the Lord provided. I was able, within 10 days, to buy a 1989 model Subaru four-wheel drive in very good condition. And through gifts of the Lord's people, I was able to buy Bibles, because these folk were asking for Bibles. Rex had already visited both of these groups of Christians, taking Marco Wakuzi with him, an African brother, Kenyan brother, who is in the Bible school and actually handles a radio ministry from the Emmaus Bible School. And they went down and visited, and they took some Bibles. We sent money through Facts for Faith, gifts to Facts for Faith from various folk. We sent, and they provided the first lot of Bibles, baptized the leaders, James Onwandu and other leaders in that new work. Some 10 or a dozen were baptized. Marco baptized them in the Kuja River, and then he preached the gospel, and I think another dozen were saved. And then later on they visited George Seesaw and just had a time there to get to know him, preparing the way for my visit. Then I arrived, and within 10 days, with Marco with me — I always travel with an African — we traveled away from Nairobi down through the Rift Valley, and then we climbed up into the high country where the tea is grown around Kericho, and then we headed southwest right down towards the Tanzanian Lake Victoria border. Well, the roads weren't too bad until I got to Rongo, and I found there was a full-time worker there that Rex put me in touch with, Daniel Ochieng and his wife Damaris. They were very kind. I stayed at the Bishop's House, which is the Catholic mission, quite comfortable there. Cold shower, and my little kerosene stove and lantern came in use. My camp stretcher, which I bought, my folding table, my folding chair. You see, I was going to do what no other missionaries in that area had done, and that was live with the people. And then I headed out. James Onwandu came in to meet me at Rongo, and I said, "How far is it?" He said, "It's about 80 kilometres. I said, "How long will it take?" He said, "An hour and a half." Well, it was right about the hour and a half. It was only 23 kilometres, but it was low gear, and it was incredible territory. Roads that haven't been graded since the British left. Well, I arrived there. They had cleared the rocks to allow me to get in on the last section of the road. They walk out for an hour to get out to the nearest matatu. That's the little taxis that carry them around the country. And they'd built a bridge over quite a creek to let me in, and they'd put months in clearing through a rock barrier to allow me to get the car down to where their house was on their shamba. That's their little farm. And so I arrived there and moved in and explained to them that I would look after myself and do my own cooking, because I'm an old man, and if I don't eat my Western food, I might get sick, and if I get sick, I'll be no good to you or anybody else. So I had to be pretty careful, put up my mosquito net and all the rest of it. But the Lord was really with me, not by might nor by power. I had a sense that God was in control, that I was in His will. And so we began intensive Bible studies. They have no buildings. They're meeting under the gum trees, the expatriates. I was among the expatriates. There's gum trees planted all through that high country. And we met under the trees. They put up a little shelter because of my need here to keep the sun off me. And I'd sit on a wooden chair and a wooden table, preach for an hour, hour and a half, then question times could go for another hour. They're sitting on the ground, on the stones, on the logs, And the response was absolutely incredible. James was sending out men preaching the gospel. Men, I'll name a few of them. We have men like Isaiah Manga, tall, thin chap who was mainly my interpreter, powerful as he interpreted. I could just hear him. And people walking past along the tracks near us, I would stop and preach the gospel, and I saw those people stop and sit down, and some of them got saved. It was this sort of a situation, the Spirit of God really working, and the people responding, giving out Bibles to them for the first time, having a Bible in their hand. They're very, very poor. And going through things like eldership, the ministry of men and women in the church, baptism, the Lord's Supper, we broke bread. The first time they broke bread together with all the brothers taking part. And it was amazing how quickly they took to these things. And then we went on. I did the book of Ephesians with them, overview. I did the book of Hebrews. I was amazed. Women sitting there saying, "Are you following this? An overview of Hebrews." And they were following me. Amazing, isn't it? Just introducing them to Old Testament concepts. So I had 2 weeks of meetings with them, and then I moved away, and we went visiting some other smaller churches that they had planted. Isaiah would walk for 3.5 hours, and in 12 months he'd started a new church with some 30 in fellowship. It took me 1.5 hours over terrible roads to get there, and we gave out Bibles and I preached, and he stayed on. That was Friday. He stayed on and he walked back Monday and he said, "You know, 11 more came to the Lord this weekend following your visit." I went to another place where they had sent in a worker. He had a handful of believers, 10 or a dozen. I stayed in the homes there with them, and Isaiah walked in. He had walked for 5 kilometres following a meeting with folk on a hillside. He'd walked back to say that another 7 had received the Lord, 4 women and 3 men. And I said to him, "What are you going to do with them? Are you going to start another work?" He said, "Yes, that will be another church." James wrote to me saying that he had 7 groups of Christians, 7 groups, churches wanting registration. We had men coming to us from villages and from farming areas requesting to register new churches, new groups, wanting to start new churches. By the time we left, there were 10 seeking registration. Through Rex and Dorothy, under the banner of the Brethren Assembly Fellowship Kenya, I'd gone through them with them in Nairobi, the conditions of registration, and found that we had tremendous fellowship in doctrinal matters and agreement, and the simple doctrinal statement I agreed with. And so I laid this out before the brothers and sisters, and they said that they accepted from the Word of God the position that was required, and so they asked me to try and get registration for them. I've had a letter from James since then, and I gave him, not only did we supply Bibles to them, but I also gave him cash to buy Bibles among other churches they were planting among the Maasai to the east. They started a church among the Maasai people. This is among the Kisii people we're talking about here. To the east, the Maasai. I gave him money to buy Bibles. He went down, he tells me in his letter, he preached the gospel, and some 15 or 17 received the Lord on the spot. He also provided Bibles. They're only giving Bibles to those who are proving themselves to be faithful attenders because of the numbers that are asking for Bibles. Only faithful attenders are receiving them. I then moved back to be with Daniel O'Ching, the full-time assembly worker, and I had 2 weeks among the established assemblies, and there's a great need for teaching among them. There doesn't appear to be anyone available to do it. Rex is so busy, he gets out, but he can only go in for a half a day. He hasn't been staying among the people as I did. And I also found a tremendous response because I lived among them. And I had 2 weeks of teaching among existing assemblies, and also James had sent a man called Moses Kaimongi from the Kisii people down to the west along Lake Victoria to plant a church at a place called Kodongo among the Luo tribe. 2 years ago, a little over, the Luo and the Kisii were fighting, burning one another's houses and killing one another. And yet here is a Kisii brother leaving his wife, 21-year-old wife, 2 little children, travelling all these, maybe 150 kilometres down, and he's planted a church at Kodongo among the Luo people. And I stayed there among those people and preached and taught them, and we broke bread. I'm sure you brothers will forgive me. We broke bread on a Tuesday, even though I taught them we should do it on the Lord's Day, because it was the only time I could be with them. And he introduced me to a friend of his from Kisumu, further west, right on Lake Victoria, one of the Port Lakes. This man wanted to meet me. We talked about our doctrinal beliefs. And he's asked for registration. I couldn't get down there, but he is a fundi, which it means he's a tradesman, a bricklayer in Kisumu, and he has led 23 people to the Lord in that seaport town. And there is now an assembly there. I hope on my next visit to be able to get down to spend time among these folk at Kisumu. I was also able to get down near to Lake Victoria at a place called Manga, and the fourth wife of a man called Joshua, her name is Rhoda. She's a real spiritual powerhouse. She and another sister were really instrumental in getting that assembly going, and she and her husband are in fellowship. The other three wives go elsewhere. But we had some wonderful time, stayed in her home, and also I was able to give them $110 Australian to start a clinic there. I also started one amongst James's people. They are dying because they do not have the money to pay the hospitals, and without money you die. And this is a trial because they happen to have nurses there, and these nurses are not able to get work because they need $1,000 Australian to pay the bribe to get a job in the government hospitals. So, you know, the Lord can even overrule. So this is a little bit of a trial. I didn't know what money was available in my MasterCard, walking by faith. My wife was a month away by letter. No telephone, no electricity, no email, no way of contacting. And so I tried this as an experiment, and there are another four groups at least among these assemblies asking to start clinics to save lives. So that's another matter you might pray about. I'm seeking just God's wisdom, and I want to just see what the results are and how it works out before committing too much along that track. I then moved down right onto the Tanzanian border, heading west towards Lake Victoria. It's actually only about less than 40 kilometres from Lake Victoria at this point, at a place called Mgongo, where George Cecil had written to me from. George and James were unknown to each other, but both had been praying that the Lord would send them a Bible teacher. George and the group with him had left the Seventh-day Worldwide Church of God some 2 years ago under conviction of the errors there. And in my correspondence, I laid it down the line that this is what we believe, and if you're interested in what we teach, this is it. I'd come to the point with all these letters coming, and there were others writing to me that you know, I can't handle all this. So, you know, it's got to be straight and plain. And I was like that with the brothers, and I found they respected it. And I had Easter meetings there. Now, leaders came from Tanzania and the area, 17 groups calling themselves churches came, leaders, representatives from about 15 made it. And we had 4 days of solid teaching with these leaders and with any of the brothers or sisters that could make it locally. They rode on push bikes, they walked, they came on matatus, and we had tremendous time. We had meetings of a night with these men where we talked over the great doctrines of the faith. And it turned out that there ended up being 22 churches seeking registration among this group. 10 among James Onwandu's group and 22 among this group. And my interpreter was George's cousin, a man called William Akoto. And William is a fine fellow, educated, age 27, just leaving a business school in Nairobi. Tremendous man, and I was very much impressed with him. And William and I became very close friends. William would sleep on the floor beside me. They really protected me. They would travel with me. And so he was my interpreter, and we had these weekends of meetings there, and 22 churches, including 8 from Tanzania. Now, all those brethren couldn't get there, but George and William have been reaching out, teaching the things that they understood from what I had been teaching them in the material I'd been sending them. And there are two churches in Mwanza, that's right down in Tanzania at the bottom of Lake Victoria, among the Sukumu people, seeking registration. They couldn't get there, but I gave George American dollars to buy them Bibles. I tried to get into Tanzania, but I have to get a temporary residency visa. And there are eight churches in Tanzania seeking registration, and through Rex Reardon, he has a contact with an Irish brother in Dar es Salaam and is seeking registration for those eight churches. And I'm also looking at applying for permanent residency visas, if I can get them, to allow me to come and go both into Kenya and into Tanzania. So the Lord has opened a tremendous door. I got right down to Lake Victoria. Now both these groups are sending leaders out and they're planting new churches. And right down at Mahuro Bay, right on the Tanzanian border on Lake Victoria, I had a weekend there. It took me an hour and a half to cover 31 kilometres, to give you some idea of the state of the roads. And the Subaru's very low. I hit the petrol tank and boy was I praying. I've got to get a cover over it before I take it out again. But we got through, and I had a weekend there, and we taught the believers there, new work, only 12 months old, some 15 believers, and many came out for counselling for salvation when I preached the gospel. The Easter meetings at Magongo, I felt I've got to preach, I've been teaching, but Saturday night I felt this is it, I've got to preach the gospel. I preached on Luke 15, and I tried to put it into their culture. You know, this young man, I'm sick of the life here on the Shamba, Dad, please give me my share. So Dad sold so many cows and this and this and this, and then he headed for Nairobi. And after I'd preached, I said, look, if anyone wants to receive Christ, I'm going up to my room, my little hut up the top, grass thatched mud hut, come up and see me. I was very tired and I didn't feel anything was happening, and I went up there and they went on talking and singing, and then my interpreter came in, William, and he said, aren't you going to come out and talk to the people? I said, what people? He said, there's a lot of people out here. And I walked out, there were 15 people wanting to receive the Lord that night. Now it's not of me, it's not of my power, it's God at work. God is working. We could say that there's an awakening is taking part among these two groups. I didn't see it amongst the established assembly, but these two groups are on fire. They're reaching out. I didn't interfere with the way they're structuring, other than to teach them. Instead of the pastor title, they're now calling themselves elders. They're appointing a number of elders over the churches. And where George Sisu was the bishop over all those churches, he's now, I said, you're really like me. You're really a Timothy. You're like Titus. And he's going out. I bought three bicycles for some of these workers. And they're going out and they're preaching and they're giving out Bibles, and the work is just advancing and advancing. I just want to give you a brief outline. Through gifts from the Lord's people, I was able to give out 570 Bibles in the Kisii language, the Luo, the Sukumu, the Maasai and Swahili languages. Hymn books are needed. I didn't know what the finances were, so I ended up providing 280 hymn books in the various languages. I think they're mainly redemption hymns and translations, and some of their own, which they were singing. And we worked it out. It wouldn't be 1 to 3, 1 to 4 hymn books. So they've got some hymn books. Many of these groups only had one Bible, maybe 10 or 15 people in a church. The biggest of the churches has about 80 in it. And bicycles, I bought 3 bicycles. You can buy a brand new Indian bike called Hero there for $110 Australian. Clinics, 2 on trial to see what the outcome is. I just want to mention one thing. If you have a Scofield Bible lying around at home gathering dust and you have no further use for it, you might like to pass it on to me. I'm passing some of these on to the leaders. I've had some a New Breeze and some Thompson chain, but I think they're probably a little bit heavy for the leaders. So if you have Scofield Bibles, please pass them on. So I'm applying for residency visa in Kenya and Tanzania. I've also been asked to lead a tour to Israel in January. Some of you may have seen that. If you're interested in that, let me know. I've got a brochure here. It'll be an economy tour to Israel, and God willing, following that tour, I'm planning to fly from Tel Aviv to Nairobi for another possibly 4 months of teaching among these people. So Rex and I are working together to seek to build them up in their most holy faith. The need is not for young missionaries to go out. These people are winning souls and planting churches, but the need is just for a little encouragement, a little support, and also for just some teaching from mature men who are able to teach them and ground them in the ways of the Lord. So rejoice with me in what God is doing, because there are times of refreshing in the southwest corner of Kenya, times of refreshing from the Lord. Thank you very much.